This is Atani Talks Radio, the Shia, where we talk a topic for the week for the audience members to keep. We're talking this week about nature. We have many different topics we like to get through. And I was thinking about how even though my allergies are killing me, Lahavdil, the time of year is fantastic. Spring is a beautiful, beautiful season when the life starts again in terms of the trees, in terms of the greener, in terms of the shrubbery and all the things around us. And it's such a beautiful world that Hashem made. Did you ever notice how beautiful Hashem made the world? Did you ever take a minute to appreciate the nature Hashem created? I remember listening to a lecture by maybe Rabbi Schaefer or someone else, how they go in detail, how everything Hashem did, every aspect he did was literally for our pleasure, for our benefit. The idea of an orange, a really good orange. You ever get a really good orange, a really good clementine? You open up, it's vibrant orange. And inside is vibrant orange, and the actual taste of it is so good, it really like bursts in the mouth. Hashem makes all these beautiful things, breathtaking scenery, beautiful mountainscapes, amazing views, gorgeous sunsets, and so much more. And the world comes directly from Hashem himself. But how often do we stop and appreciate it? How often do we contemplate it and try to fathom its vastness? Sometimes it's important to literally stop, pause and smell the roses, see the sights, soak in the beautiful nature made by Hashem. I apologize for my allergies that are majorly kicking in here in May in 2024. Mark and I used to go to different botanical gardens in the past. We've also brought the kids. A couple of months ago, we took them to the botanical gardens in the Bronx. We went ourselves also, pre-kids to the one in the Bronx, another time with just one kid. The one in Brooklyn is wonderful. The one in the Bronx are two of the Are the Brooklyn and the Bronx one are two of the best ones you've been to. On our trip to England, when we were first married, we went to a garden as well. On that same trip, we went to Israel and stayed a few days in Netanya, soaking in the beautiful views, the water, the sun, and so much more. Throughout the years, we've tried to go to different parks and different gardens right around where we live. There's a great park I'm a big, big fan of, just a few minutes away, especially with our kids. There's also parks you could go to where you could see the harbor and the water, and there's pretty scenery all around. It's important to take in what Hashem created in this world and appreciate it. There's so many natural wonders Hashem made in this world. Think about the Grand Canyon in Arizona, the Ramon Crater in Israel, the mountains of Hawaii, and so much more. We're actually working that on book two and five. We released the first one on lulu.com. The second one we're working on, the idea, a sneak peek, is the world tour where we're going to take Five and his family around Israel, and then we're going to take him around the world to different, you know, natural wonders, and then around America, God willing. So stay tuned for that and see it, God willing, hopefully in the future. Interestingly, in my humble opinion, and of course it's not my opinion, the Chachamim, the sages, the Gemara, everyone says this. There's a literal Gemara that talks about this, how the land of Israel, and it's Yom HaAtzmaut tonight, and the previous day was Yom HaZikaron. We should only know from good things. We should never have any more soldiers or anyone falling. And there should only be peace and wonderfulness. And of course, it should be a Zechus and Yeshua and Raful for all those in captivity and all those who are fighting the good fight against evil. But tonight in Yom HaAtzmaut, it's no coincidence where we think about the beauty of the world, the beauty of Israel, on the day we celebrate Israel's 76th birthday. Israel is the most beautiful land in the entire world and contains many of the most beautiful creations by Hashem in the world. Contains all the elements. I see it as a micro picture of the world, a microcosm of the world in terms of climates and features found around the world, all contained in one tiny land according to geographic size, comparable to the size of New Jersey, although laid out very differently. I've always yearned to live there, and my wife and I and our kids should be zocha one day to be there. Mashiach should come speedily in our days, and that day should be today, where the whole Jewish people make it there. But when we think about nature, we think about Israel, it seems that so much of it is contained in Israel itself. From the land to the products to everything in between, it seems it can be found in Israel. In fact, here's the key Gemara from Kedushin 49b, where it says the 10 kav of wisdom descended to the world. Eretz Yisrael, Israel took 9 of them. All the rest of the world took one kav, one key. 10 kav, 10 keys of beauty descended to the world. Jerusalem took 9, and all the rest of the world in its entirety took one. I always found this very hard to fathom because you go to Hawaii, we haven't been zocha to go yet, maybe one day. You go to Arizona, haven't been zocha, but you go to these different places and the really natural wonders, beautiful places, and all of that combined still does not combine to the beauty of Yerushalayim. And we're not talking, you know, Ein Gedi or Masada. We're talking Yerushalayim itself, the old city, the walls, because it has a beautifulness, to its ancientness, and to its uniqueness. Jerusalem took nine, and I would suffice to say that really the whole Israel took nine. The rest of the entire world took one. So that's really fascinating. Israel itself, Yerushalayim itself, has nine kops, nine keys of wisdom and beauty. The whole rest of the world combined has just one key of wisdom and beauty. Amazing. I tend to think that the land of Israel really is the nine keys, the nine kav, and we could think about that in general, because Israel in its entirety is beautiful, and Israel has all of its ecosystems. Listen to this. Israel encompasses all the natural world, the geographic beauty, as well as spirituality. It contains so much of it. Wikipedia explains, Lahavdil, the geography of Israel is very diverse, with the desert conditions in the south and snow-capped mountains all the way in the north and the Hermon. Israel is located at the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea in Western Asia. It is bounded to the north by Lebanon, to the northeast by Syria, to the east by Jordan, the southwest by Egypt, and of course, on the left of the sea, the major ocean on the left. On the west, to the west of Israel is the Mediterranean Sea, which makes up the majority of Israel's 273-kilometer, 170-mile coastline. Sounds like a lot, but again, if you think about New Jersey, not very big. Israel has a small coastline on the Red Sea in the south. Israel is divided into four physiographic regions: the Mediterranean coastal plain, the central hills, the Jordan Rift Valley, and the Negev Desert. Israel is divided east-west by a mountain range running north to south along the coast. Yerushalayim sits on the top of the ridge. Somebody once said that Yerushalayim, Har HaBayis, is the top point of Israel. Not sure if that's true or not, but it makes sense spiritually, at least. The closest to being to Hashem with the base of Migdash, we should be zocha that it comes again. And then east of which lies the Dead Sea Graben, which is a pull-apart basin on the Dead Sea Transformed Fault. Again, the lowest part of that region. I don't know if it's the lowest part of Israel, the lowest part of the whole Asia. I'm not sure, but it's very, very low, and it gets even lower every year because of the evaporation of the salt and the very, very salty sea. The numerous limestone and sandstone layers of the Israeli mountains serve as aquifers through which water flows from the west flank to the east. Several springs have formed along the Dead Sea, each an oasis, most notably the oases at Ein Gedi and Ein Bokeh in Neve Zohar. Israel also has a number of areas of karst topography. Caves in the region have been used for thousands of years as shelter, storage rooms, barns, and as places of public gatherings. The far northern coastline of the country has some chalk landscapes, best seen at Rosh HaNikra, a chalk cliff into which a series of grottos have been eroded. So you think about how fascinating this is. Fascinating, crazy. In the tiny country of Israel, which is like the size of the state of New Jersey, there is such a diverse topography with four main different types of areas. In the tiny country, Hashem made that there are mountains, valleys, deserts, rainforests, forests, snow mountains, the Hermon, hills, seas, including the Kinneret and the Dead Sea, rivers, including the Yarden, the Jordan River, the ocean, ports, a crater or canyon, the Ramon Crater, like the Grand Canyon, stones, limestones, and rock, the Dead Sea, saltiest water on earth, saltiest water on earth, and lowest water and lowest point on earth, natural hot springs, Ein Gedi, coral reefs, and so much more. It's crazy. Literally every geographical aspect of the world is contained in Israel. It is a microcosm of the whole world. According to one opinion, in the Convention on Biological Diversity, the number of ecosystem types covering Israel's entire land area depends on the criteria for classifying them. According to one classification, 46 ecosystem types were defined, clustered into 11 groups, the largest of which is the woodland and shrubland ecosystems. 46 in this tiny country, our homeland. Amazing. We need to appreciate the world Hashem made, especially that of Israel. My wife and I tend to have watched in the past virtual tours of Israel from One Israel Fund and Eve Harrow and David Sussman of David Sussman Israel Tours through his TV show. Amazing to see the awesomeness and beauty of the country, this green, this wonderful green which sprouted once the Jewish people came back. Of course, the Havdil, David Ben-Gurion's vision was to make the desert bloom. It's stunning to see how the country has sprouted over the years, over the 76 years especially. The connection to the areas of the words of Tanakh is simply mind-blowing. And when you think about Tu B'Av, and they would go out and they would see the trees and they would, dance amongst themselves, and everybody would find the Zivug, which shall be Zocha, that everyone should find a Zivug. Another fascinating thing to connect the field to the people. The Talmud points out in Tanis 30b, referenced in the Mishnah compiled around 1800 years ago, the great matchmaking event that would take place in Tu B'Av, a very fascinating event. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said there were no days as joyous for the Jewish people as the 15th of Av and as Yom Kippur. When the daughters of Jerusalem would go out and dance in the vineyards, and what would they say? Young man, please lift up your eyes and consider what you choose for yourself as a wife. Do not set your eyes towards beauty, but set your eyes toward a good family. As the verse states, grace is deceitful, beauty is vain. Only a woman who fears Hashem, she shall be praised. The Mishnah taught, as on them, the daughters of Yerushalayim would go out in white clothes. The 15th of Av, they would go out to the vineyards and dance. Sages taught this tradition in greater detail. The daughter of the king borrows white garments from the daughter of the high priest. The daughter of the high priest borrows from the daughter of the deputy high priest. The daughter of the deputy high priest borrows from the daughter of the priest. Anointed for war, the priest would read verses of Torah and address the army as they prepare for battle, and so on and so forth, so that there would be no embarrassment amongst one another. And the sages have thought of this in different ways also, when bringing the Bikurim or bringing animals, different ways that there's a level playing field, that everyone has the same aspect, to bring the same basket, to have the same clothing. It's just a fascinating way to think about how the nature and how the connection of people to Hashem, to land, is all one, it's all connected. Nature is in all elements of our life. We need to appreciate and utilize it for good and wonderful things. That's how the Gemara solved the Shidduch crisis during the times of the Talmud and before. Listen to what Aish points out from author Adam Ross. Rabbi Avigdor Miller, one of the last generation's great rabbis, was known to take time appreciating the awesomeness of nature, marveling at the intricate detail and unfathomable wisdom in the world that Hashem made. Look at this apple, so perfect, so sweet, so round. He would say before channeling his gratitude into a blessing, nature is not only there to feed us, but also to inspire us. We can look at the trees and their fruit as our teachers and guides. The date palm, which grows in salty conditions yet brings forth honey, teaches us to extract the good from the bad. The olive tree, which produces oil, encourages us to bring more light into the world. And the grape, which is crushed before producing expensive wine, teaches us the value of humility. We all have periods of winter in our lives, times of darkness, coldness, and isolation. Sometimes it's hard to imagine ourselves back in a positive place. In Israel, after four long cold months, most trees have lost their leaves. Of course, we see that in America too, with the winter losing its leaves, battered by the harsh winds and frost. Just when they look ready to be cut up and used for firewood, new life appears again. The almond tree blossoms. These barren trees, which have laid dormant for so long, make a comeback, excuse me. The key is not to let the difficult, non-productive times in our lives define us. Like trees, we too live our lives in cycles, like the moon that waxes and wanes, shrinking and disappearing before growing and becoming full. We need to learn from Hashem's nature, appreciate Hashem's nature, be grateful for Hashem's nature. Don't take it for granted. Don't take it as a given. Those locked up, such as throughout the pandemic times, would be so grateful to get outside to see, and especially missed having being outside. Of course, if you have a front yard or backyard, you should use it. Appreciate it. Thank Hashem for it. If you're in a building, go on walks, go to nearby parks. Hashem made nature purely for us to see it, to experience it, and to partake of it. Safaria points out, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov taught, as often as you can, take a trip out to the fields and pray. You know, they would used to pray outside in order to greet the Shabbos. All the grasses will join you. They will enter your prayers and give you strength to sing praises to God. How good is it to pray to Hashem and meditate in the meadows amidst the grass and the trees? When one goes out to the meadows to pray, every blade of grass, every plant and flower enter his prayers and help him, putting strength and force into his words. It is best to seclude yourself and meditate in the meadows outside the city. Go to a grassy field, for the grass will awaken your heart. The Sichos Haran points out, 144, he would often ride to the outskirts of the city and take walks in the field. This was for his health and other reasons than he knew. That is why there is an ability, and some people actually daven outside, especially in Safas, they would go out. I believe the Baal Shem Tov would take his students. And it's a wonderful feeling, davening outside to Hashem amongst Hashem's nature, feeling the weather, seeing the trees, and davening to Hashem. And this is what reminds us of, from my Jewish learning, explains about Kabbalah Shabbos. In the 16th century, in the small town of Safed, Sfas, located in the mountains of the Galilee in northern Israel, was a center and still is a center of Jewish mysticism. Salom ben Moshe's Halevi Alkabitz was one of the many mystics who lived and studied there. On Friday nights, the rabbi would take him and his colleagues to dress in white like bridegrooms and joyously dance and march through the fields outside town to greet the Shabbos. which is depicted in both Talmud and in mystical texts as a bride and queen. Around 1540, Alcibiades, a poet himself, composed a beautiful ode to the Shabbos bride, which is very famously known as the Hadodi, urging Jews to greet the Shabbos and extolling her virtues. The Gemara Shabbos 118a explains Rabbi Hanina would wrap himself in his garment and stand at nightfall on Shabbos Eve and say, "Come, and we will go out to greet Shabbos the Queen." Rabbi Yanai put on his garment on Shabbos Eve and said, "Enter, O bride, enter, O bride." Jewish Action points out, with author Rabbi Adler, for the Mekubalei Tzfas, this Talmudic passage served as the source for the liturgical Kabbalah Shabbos, which for them entailed a trek to the outskirts of the city to formally greet the Shabbos queen. The field was thought to be the optimum venue for this reception because of its natural ability to promote an inner contemplative mental state, as well as for its mystical associations. In fact, Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, the Ari HaKadosh, is reported as having formally invoked the image of the field by declaring at the outset, "Bo v'netzi l'kros Shabbos Malkasa l'chakal tapuchin kadishin." Let's go out toward the Shabbos queen to the field of holy fruit. Other Mekubalei Tzfas viewed any outdoor areas acceptable for the welcoming ceremony, such as the synagogue courtyard. L'chadodi, we literally say L'chadodi, L'gros Kala, P'nei Shabbos, P'nei Shabbos, L'Kabbalah, from the poem made by Rabbi Alcibiades, what must certainly have been intended as literal references to what was then the common practice of gathering in an entourage to go out and greet the Shabbos. Even the image of the field is implicitly invoked by the words L'chadodi, which in their original source in Shir HaShirim are followed by Netzei HaSoda, let's go out to the field. It should be noted that even after the Kabbalah Shabbos service was incorporated within a Beis HaKnesset setting, it was not uncommon for the Tzibur to recite Bo'i V'Shalom, if not the entire service, outdoors in the Shul patio. The Aruch HaShulchan observed that in his time, this practice had been all but forgotten. What remains today as the only vestige of this ancient minhag is the widespread practice of turning to the rear of the shul at the recitation of the Bo'i V'Shalom. People always wonder, why do we do that? To symbolically direct our gaze westward, the direction of the setting sun, toward the door, to metaphorically sort of greet in the Shabbos through the door. Rabbi Yitzchak Zev Halevi Soloveitchik Zatzal, just before the onset of Shabbos, after showering, he would don a kapata, sit on his balcony, solemnly awaiting the approach of Shabbos. At sunset, he would enter the house, check the clock to ascertain the precise moment of Shkia, turn to face west, and enthusiastically exclaim, "Bo'i v'shalom ateras bala, Bo'i chala, Bo'i chala, Bo'i chala, Shabbos malkasa l'chadodi." He would then be seated and restart Mizmor Shir, which is Tehillim, Tzadi Bet, I believe, and Tzadi Gimel Hashem Malach. An important lesson to learn, regardless of how davening happens, is that the theme is of welcoming royalty. We have a whole other lecture about royalty itself. We'll come back to that, but thinking about the nature, Shabbos should not just come upon us. We must actually anticipate it and welcome it. Too often, and Rabbi J.J. Schachter talks about this, and many other people talk about this, being an Erev Shabbos Yid, too often, especially on the short Fridays during the winter months, it is very easy to stumble, quote-unquote, into Shabbos without affording it a proper welcome. The rabbis, the sages, the commentators will talk about how someone comes and his whole body is dripping from the shower, his hair is like massively wet, and he sits down and the whole seat gets wet. I don't think that's what Hashem had in mind for us when we show up to Shabbos. It should be a little better than that for some different types and reasons. But it is very easy to stumble into Shabbos, whatever time it comes in. It behooves us to reclaim the precious moments prior to Shabbos and to use them to the utmost, light a little early, instead of lighting at 7:43, 7:40, 7:38. Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav Zatzal, often spoke of this phenomenon that he felt was lacking in American Orthodoxy, that of the Erev Shabbos Yid. The Erev Shabbos Jew experiences the sanctity of Shabbos so deeply that he infuses his pre-Shabbos preparation with unique aura of anticipation. The Rav related how such Jews abounded in every Eastern European shtetl and hamlet. The ranks of Erev Shabbos Yidden include many a humble tailor, a water carrier, and smith whose simple piety paralleled that of the most erudite scholars. By midday, tools of the trade were set aside. Done. Shops were closed. One could palpably sense the approach of Shabbos. One would enter the shul well before sundown and find Jews of every stripe enraptured in the recitation of Shir HaShirim. Such were the likes of Ereshkigal's Yidden, Ereshkigal's Jew. Sadly, the Rav bemoaned the disappearance of this breed of Jew, this type of Jew, noting that although a contemporary Orthodox Jewry might be meticulous in its Shabbos observance, it has lost this special spark, this special spiritual flair of the Erev Shabbos Jew. Going out to daven to welcome the Shabbos is a wonderful way to interpret how to bring in Shabbos. Davening outside is a wonderful way to talk to Hashem while appreciating His creations and nature, at least to look out the window to face in the right direction towards the outside to bring it in. Kabbalas Rabbah points out, when Hashem created the first human, He took him and led him around all the trees of the Garden of Eden of Gan Eden. He said to him, "Look at my works, how beautiful and praiseworthy they are, and all that I've created. It was for you that I created, Bishvilcha." You know, we say Bishvili Nivra Olam, Nivra Olam, Bishvili Nivra Olam. We're supposed to say the Gemara talks about one of the comments you should keep in your pocket, and the other one Ani Afer for Afer, so that you can balance these major concepts. But literally, Hashem leads Adam around the garden. It's for you. Pay attention that you do not corrupt and destroy my world. If you corrupt it, there's no one to repair it after you. We need to appreciate the beauty of this world and the beauty of nature and take care not to destroy it. Rabbi Arya Kaplan points out on Aish.com, everything God created has a purpose to fulfill. Although Hashem is omnipotent and has no need of messengers, He decreed that the world should run according to natural laws, according to quote-unquote nature. In this way, He makes use of all things to fulfill His will and to guide man towards His destiny. Therefore, everything that may affect man, whether it be a drop of rain or a thunderclap, is under God's direct control. When we walk outside, when we see the creations, even a blade of glass, there's not a single blade of grass that doesn't grow without Hashem's direct intervention. Fascinating. Appreciate the hand of Hashem wherever you see it. Rabbi Left points out on H.com, when it comes to using nature as a path to Hashem, one's explorations must be carefully guided so that one indeed finds Hashem through his observation of nature. King David proclaimed that God is to be found in nature. From Tehillim, Perek Chet, when I see your heavens, the work of your fingers, I am inspired to realize my insignificance in relation to Hashem, who is overwhelming. There remains a danger in the observation of nature, as the Torah warns us, lest you raise your eyes heavenward and observe the sun, the moon, and the stars, and you are enticed to bow to them and serve them, God forbid, from Devarim. All creation was designed to inspire and lead us to love Hashem. The Talmud points out in Rosh Hashanah 31a, saying that on the 50th of the week, we recite chapter 81 of Psalms. Tehillim, we recite, I believe that's Pei Aleph, I'm very bad with the Hebrew letters offhand. Chapter 81, sing out to Hashem, our strength. For on this day, the birds and the fish were created to praise Hashem's name. Rashi explained that it is not the birds and fish themselves which sing God's praises. Rather, when people observe the birds and fish, they give praise to the one who created them. Similarly, Perek Shira, which relates the songs of various animals, plants, and inanimate objects, is explained by Rabbi Yosef Mitrani in his work Beis Elokim, is referring not to the utterances of these creatures and objects, but to the responses the natural phenomena evoke in the human beings who observe and study them. The accessibility of nature to our physical senses is an important supplement to our knowledge of God. As physical beings, we are affected more by what we see, hear, touch, smell, and taste than by what we know intellectually. But don't, God forbid, turn to anything but Hashem. Don't think nature or science or anything has independent power at all. It all comes only from Hashem Himself. As the Ish Rabbi points out, when seeing unusually shaped or beautiful mountains that one can readily recognize as a wonder of God, one should recite the following blessing from the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law. Blessed are you, Hashem, King of the universe, who forms the works of creation. There are some guidelines involved, not from the plane, not so within the past month, but we need to physically acknowledge and appreciate the creations of Hashem in our life, especially those around us in Hashem's natural world. Near the end of his life, Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch announced that he was going to tour Switzerland on foot. His students were shocked and tried to dissuade him from risking his health. Rabbi Hirsch explained, "When I come before Hashem, when I become before the Almighty, I will have to answer for many things. But what will I tell him when he asks me, Shimshon, did you see my Alps? Did you see my Switzerland Alps? We're supposed to appreciate the wonders of this world. Make sure You do so. And nowadays, even if you can't afford traveling there, you could always look at it on Google Earth. You could always look at it. There are these different programs on Zoom and whatnot that you could see these different aspects to be involved in. Rabbi Dov Lev points out on Aish.com, the Torah exhorts us to love God, but how does one love an immortal, infinite, non-physical being, which is compared to a burning fire? The Rambam, Maimonides, teaches that one way is to focus on the wonders of creation. When we observe how a little seed can transform into something so beautiful and alive, we're overcome with awe and appreciation for Hashem. Mankind's first mission was to tend a garden. Adam was placed in the Garden of Eden and Gan Eden to look after and cultivate the beautiful garden Hashem prepared. Hashem first appeared to Moshe in a thorn bush, a burning bush, because Hashem wanted to emphasize that even vegetative life is infused with the divine presence. The sages tell us that one should not simply enjoy the beauty of nature for its own sake, but use it as an opportunity to praise Hashem for creating such beauty in this world. Some of God's most amazing miracles are happening right now in your own backyard. It is considered praiseworthy to plant trees for people to benefit from the shade, the beauty, and the fruit. The Talmud talks about using a metaphor of a tree to illustrate the idea of being selflessly devoted to building a better future. An old man was planting a tree when a young person passed by and asked, "What are you doing? What are you planting?" The old man answered, "A carob tree." "That's foolish," said the youth. "Don't you know it takes 70 years for a carob tree to bear fruit?" The old man said, "That's okay. Just as others planted for me, I am planting for future generations." The Torah compares a human being to a tree. There's much that we can learn from trees, from their vibrancy, their growth patterns, and perseverance under difficult conditions. A tree needs to be planted in the earth. The soil is not only the source through which nourishment is absorbed, but also provides space for the roots to anchor firmly in the ground. This is true for people as well. To paraphrase the Talmud in Pirkei Avos, if you have many branches and few roots, then a wind can turn your tree upside down. But if you have few branches and many roots, even if all the winds of the world were to blow, you will not budge from your place. Perhaps the most fascinating aspect of gardening in Israel pertains to the laws of the sabbatical year to Shemitah. The Torah says that during the final year of a regular 7-year agricultural cycle, the land of Israel must remain fallow and ownerless. During the Shemitah year, it is forbidden to plow, plant, harvest, prune, etc. Moreover, whatever grows on its own may be eaten by anyone, and the field's owner may not stop others from partaking. The observance of Shemitah imbues trust in Hashem with an appreciation that the land produces fruit only because Hashem wills it. Make sure to firmly plant your roots in the ground in a literal and figurative way, appreciating and using Hashem's nature, using your own nature to put roots in the ground through doing mitzvahs and Torah learning throughout your days. The Eish Rabbi also points out that the delicate balance comes from a Devarim. When an army surrounds a city and prepares to use a tree as a battering ram, the Torah says that a fruit-bearing tree may not be used for this purpose. If one uses a fruit-bearing tree, then the fruit will needlessly be destroyed, since the same objective could have been accomplished with a tree that does not bear fruit. On the other hand, a person may cut down a fruit tree for some constructive purpose. As pointed out by the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, this encapsulates the Torah perspective on the environment. While we may use the world for our needs, we may never irresponsibly damage or destroy the environment. Needless destruction is called Baal Tashas. Don't needlessly destroy things. Take care of the world around you, even your Dalet Amos of the world in your front and backyard. That's why we also often have time to have people to tend to look after our property. You have a gardener or whatnot to be involved with these kind of things. And just to point out some fascinating things, we're thinking about Israel's 76th birthday. They did amazing things in their 76 young years on the earth, involving clean tech and solar energy, green energy, water management, water conservation, agricultural technology, marine and the coastal environment, environmental planning, air quality, reforestation, and recycling. They did amazing things in all of these areas within the 76 years that they have been around. The world should look and learn from the good that Israel does and learn only from that. And we should only know from good things as well. When we think about the world, we think about nature, we think about how Hashem brings these things out to us. We should do what we can to realize that every tree, every plant is brought by Hashem, is given to us by Hashem, and is brought to us to make us appreciate the world, because everything is from Hashem just for us to benefit from. Hashem can be seen in the elements of the world. We just have to look for him, appreciate him, and understand that it's all from Hashem and the nature around us. We should be a builder, not a destroyer, especially of the environment, especially of earth around you. Don't waste, don't crumble. Make sure to build up and brighten the wonderful world and nature that Hashem gave us. The tree of life, the element of our basic existence, is that of the Torah. Cling to it as a plant clings to earth in order to thrive in life. Hashem made beautiful works in the world from the beginning of time that stay with us to the current day. Look at the elements of the world. It all came from Hashem from the beginning of time with all the principles and all the aspects of the world. Care for the world, nurture it, appreciate it, make blessings over it, not only for ourselves, but for the good and sake of future generations. Hashem made the world in a beautiful, natural, and tranquil manner and way. Don't corrupt it. Don't disgrace it. Don't trash it. Don't graffiti it. Make sure to be careful in what you did. You could be that person who is a seed for change. Just like a seed makes the whole tree grow, so too we could be a seed of good in the world around us to fight against all the evil that is there. Use your elements to nourish the surroundings in the world around you. Don't waste any seed of talent. Use your quality, your beings, to enrich the world around you with any nourishment you could offer the world. Think about how the Jewish people are like one tree with many branches brought out in order to make the world a good place, and understand how one tree, one plant can be structured to even help one person. Acknowledge and thank Hashem for the wonderful nature and the wonderful world he gave us. We should truly care for it as best we can. Make sure to get out and experience, really feel the beauty of the world Hashem gave us. Talk to Hashem outside, daven outside, sing and dance, play music outside. Make sure to visit parks and gardens and natural wonders. Go see the water and the trees, the beaches and the rocks. See what Hashem gave us. Truly treasure, truly love her, never taking it for granted. If we can appreciate the world, nurture the world, love the world Hashem gave us, maybe we could finally bring true peace in the world, usher in an amazing time period for all the world speedily in our days. And may that day, in fact, be today. This has been Tani Talks Radio, where we talk a shiur for the week for audience members to keep. And I'm your host, Tani.